Blog Talk Radio.
Live from the Dean's Den, the Dean of Wrestling Referees, Steve Kane, with wrestling news, wrestling views, and wrestling news news. Sit back, pop a cold one, and get ready for Live from the Dean's Den.
Okay, now, all right, Lee, can you hear me?
I can, yeah.
Okay, all right, good, okay. Maybe it was on my end. All right, well, here we go. Going to start out, big breaking story here that literally just came out about 20 minutes before we hit air. And that is that John Moxley is now confirmed for Bloodsport 3.
That would be fun.
There you go.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Well, that has now definitely made this a must-see event, whether for those of you who can see it live, or if you're watching it on the Fight app, because I mean this lineup is really really set up. We'd already known about Homicide, and Josh Alexander, and now joining Moxley in that lineup is Eric Hammer, Killer Kelly, Lindsey Snow, Grizzly Cal Jack, Chris Dickinson, Calvin Tankman, and this is the one that definitely surprises me, Lee. The current Impact Knockouts champion, Deonna Purrazzo, is on Bloodsport.
Wow. That'll be interesting.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I know, you know, Purrazzo does do a lot of submission moves. I mean, remember that double sort of chicken wing thing that she did to win the title from Jordan Grace. But, I mean, this is a one where knockouts are the other possible way of winning a match. So I'm just wondering, is Purrazzo going to be willing to, if necessary, take a knockout loss? And how would that look for a, you know, major company champion to do?
Yeah. You know, at the same time, it's a little different realm, you know.
Yeah.
It's quite different than I guess what we're used to seeing, you know, and
right.
You know, Bloodsport this Bloodsport 3, we already know Moxley's going to shine like crazy at this thing.
Oh, yeah.
But
I mean, this, of course, we all know is right up his alley.
Yeah, yeah. So for her, it's surprising. Maybe she has something she wants to prove, or, you know, maybe she just, I don't know, it's an interesting draw, to say the least.
Right. Yeah, I'm absolutely intrigued. I'm waiting to see how these matchups are going to be put together for this. Whether at some point there will be a possible mixed match in this thing or not. I don't know how GCW management is going to go, whether they'll go along with something like that or not. Because, yeah, it's got Josh Barnett's name on it, but it's still under the auspices of Game Changer Wrestling.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, hard to tell for sure where they might go with this. Obviously, we'll have to watch over the next week or so, because, of course, I mean, we're talking, this is coming up very, very quickly. I mean, it's only in two weeks. If I'm, let's see here, if I, you know, let me pop up here on Killer Kelly's to make sure that I have that date right. I know that it's about 3 weeks away, Sunday, October 11th, over in Indianapolis. So that's gonna be a good one here. Okay, so now we'll go ahead with our first big spoiler here, and that is that Melina has apparently signed to return to WWE.
Yeah, how interesting is that one?
Yeah.
She hasn't been with the company since 2011, and she was recently with NWA, and now we're going to see her in WWE again.
Yeah. It's a very odd situation. And of course, the other thing is, how are they going to put her on Raw, or would they potentially put her on SmackDown? You have to look very carefully, because, of course, after all, who else is on SmackDown? Her ex.
Yeah.
John Morrison.
I was waiting for that question, to be honest with you. I don't think they'd put her on SmackDown, knowing the history between the two of them. I think that...
Yeah.
I think we'd run across some, if they had those two on the show, we'd run across some like crazy antics, like the Bushwhackers or something.
Yeah. Except of course that was a gimmick. This would be for real. I remember one time when she was doing a live Periscope, and She went into the medicine cabinet and pulled out the bottle of John's blue pill that he uses. do we really want to have the possibility of that little fact, coming back up to?
Yeah.
I don't know, Lee.
Oh man, yeah, it's I mean, I feel like they would put her on Raw. The Raw ratings right now are lower than SmackDown. Or, you know,
yeah,
to combatant with AEW, put her on NXT. I mean, Beth Phoenix is down there now on commentary. Wade Barrett is down there now on commentary. You've got
right.
The NXT Tag Team Champions, Breeze Dango, who were on the main roster, and you also have the NXT Champion, Finn Balor, who was on the main roster. So,
right,
you know,
right.
Triple H once
and
said that he would never... Go ahead.
Go ahead.
Triple H once said he would never take people from the main roster and put them on NXT. But, you know, we're seeing AEW with the ratings against NXT kind of put a little change in that. So, you know, they could put her on NXT or...
Right.
I just don't see her going to SmackDown. I think they need someone like Melina to be on Raw, more to speak.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they need, and in general, they need more female power, especially since Becky's out, without, and they kind of really seem to be struggling with the women's division again, like they did prior to the whole women's evolution and stuff like that.
Yeah, the women's division, at least on the Raw side, has really kind of suffered with Becky being gone. I mean, Asuka, you know, I love her to death. She's a, you know, she's an excellent worker and that, but you have to have people that can step up to her level. And right now they don't have a lot of that. I mean, yeah, they've got Mickey James and that, but you know, who knows how much longer she's going to stick around. I mean, Melina's coming in at an advanced age too. I mean, they're both 41. And Melina is 5 months older than Mickey is. And Asuka, I believe, is in her mid-30s, if I'm remembering correctly. And I know Natty is somewhere up in the same age bracket as Melina and Mickey. So you know,
yeah,
and Lana is, you know, Lana might be younger, but Lana is not, I'm sorry, she is not really solid worker material. She's, you know, she's better off as a manager, as a mouthpiece and that, and this whole thing, it definitely... When they did the split up angle between her and Miro Rusev, it totally screwed up her character. It took her heat. I mean, it's just what she had now is non-existent.
No, but they've always kind of, you know, aside from Lana, you know, she's teaming with Natty, and they, my opinion, they've never given Neidhart the fair chance. I've always felt that, you know, she should be,
for sure,
you know, the women, you know, she's on Raw. I feel like she should be the Raw Women's Champion or a Tag Team Champion, but she's a great worker in everything, but. You know, they could have had great views between. You know, of the Flair versus Hart type rivalry they could have had, because they're both second generation wrestlers, and it would have been really cool to see, like, they, you know, bring back Brett and Flair himself, you know, Rick, and you know, have them be like the manager type things, and even have them, you know, have their rivalry going again or something. But
absolutely,
I think they dropped the ball. And as much as, like, Natty is probably some sort of, like, locker room leader,
right?
Unfortunately, being teamed with Lana, she feels the negative effects of it too, which just kind of sucks.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. You know, and I don't know, you know, how much the whole situation with Miro having moved over to AEW, how much an effect that's having on the creative end with her. Nick Aldis talked about the fact that he's had a feud with Bruce Pritchard for quite a while, and he's felt that Bruce is taking out his animosity towards him, Nick, on Mickey, and that's always really kind of bothered him. And that.
Yeah.
Hey Lee, which number are you on here? Are you on the 415 or the 529?
I'm a 529.
Okay. Then I'm going to mute the 415 because there was some extraneous noise coming through, and that,
okay.
All right, good. That helps. So, yeah, but getting back to this, yeah, the, you know, Natty definitely, you know, deserves much better than, she's been given over the years. No question about it. So
it's a shame. It really is. But you know, when it comes to the whole Lana, Miro, and Bruce Pritchard thing, maybe Miro should just go over there and super kick Bruce.
I would love to see that happen. I would honestly love to see that happen.
But I mean, in reality, let's be honest. I mean, I'm all joking aside, because I'm just joking around when I say stuff like that. But how many times have we seen it in the past where, you know, they break up a tag team, one partner leaves and goes to another company, and then the other partner stays and gets nothing, you know, gets jobbed out.
Yeah.
Or the best example I can give, Brett goes to WCW, Bulldog and Neidhart follow him, and Owen Hart wasn't allowed to get out of his contract. And I don't think he wasn't really jobbed out or anything, but they took him leaving. They took everybody else leaving out on him. And you see that when we get the Blue Blazer.
Yeah. Yeah. It's definitely, you know, it was a bad situation for Owen to be put in that spot and that.
Yeah.
So okay, now second spoiler. There's another UFC star that's hinting about breaking into the wrestling business, but not in the way you might think. And that is Daniel Cormier. And
yeah, he's expressed.
Yeah, go ahead.
He's expressed wanting to get into WWE, and his last fight, he retired from UFC. So, I mean, but we've seen him on commentary, and he's done a great job on that in UFC. So, who knows, you know, what's he want to do?
That's actually, that, well, funny that you should ask that. That's actually the way he wants to get in. He doesn't want to go coming in as this ex-UFC champion, tear things up like Brock, like Ronda, and that he actually wants to come in on a commentary role.
Oh wow!
So,
okay. Huh.
Yeah, yeah.
I think that would be great because the last UFC fighter we've seen come in to the WWE was Cain Velasquez, and we all saw how that lasted.
Right.
You know, he ended up getting.
Yeah. Well.
He ended up, I believe, being one of the ones that were let go during the mass.
Right. He was. He was. He well. He shouldn't have been there to begin with. He had a screwed up knee. He had a screwed up knee going back to when he did Triple Mania 25 when he was in the six man with Cody. And that he needed knee surgery before he even did that. So, he at least managed to stay to get his knee surgery covered. Whether he goes back to AAA or tries to make it in back in with WWE. I don't know. We're gonna have to wait and see about that one. So, now everybody was wondering probably last Monday or this past Monday about that situation with the Mickey James Oscar match.
Yes.
And yeah, that looked a little confusing, didn't it?
To say the least.
Well, yes. Okay. Well, Mickey went on TalkSport with Alex McCarthy, and this is what she had to say about everything that happened. I honestly don't know. I rolled back to count. One, two, there was no count. So she obviously went to go and lock back in the Oscar lock. And I think in those moments, here's the thing. It is a dangerous sport. We have to be very careful. The refs do their job, and kind of their job is to protect us and make sure it never goes too far or no one ever gets hurt. So he made his decision based on what he thought was a reality, that I was hurt or I couldn't continue. And that's unfortunate for me. I felt like I could continue, and it's an unfortunate loss. But it's not a real loss. Let's face it. It was the final decision. What can I do except go in there and throw a fit on Monday? And she goes on and she talks about this. It says, she says, in that moment, it's very hard for them to tell whether you were hurt or not. It can't just be his call either. It must have been whoever thought I was hurt. They're just trying to protect me and keep me safe because concussions are a real thing. What we do as a sport is very dangerous. So if somebody gets a concussion, not only can they not wrestle for the rest of that match, but they could possibly never wrestle again depending on how bad it is. Same with football. So we have to be careful with that, and I get it. It was unfortunate for me and Stinky, but I'm fine. My nose hurts a little bit from the knee lift, I'll be honest. And she apparently laughed a little bit. So apparently, and of course, anybody who knows, who watches WWE and watches on the camera angles knows, the referees have an earpiece. And they are getting calls from the back from whoever is the producer of the match. And if Vince is back, we'll make calls too. So, I mean, we gotta take the chance and guess this, that either Vince or whoever was the agent for that match happened to see what was going on, didn't like how it looked, and told the referee to call it.
Yeah, and you know what? To be honest, even though it was an awkward finish in everything, and it came off looking very funny to us because we were confused as fans, not knowing what was going on.
Right.
Even though whoever was in the back should really get the Barry Horowitz pat on the back for that, you know, because they were looking out for her in her best interest.
Right. Right. I mean, you know, this is the thing. I mean, these, you know, they all have lives outside of here. And, of course, you know, I mean, Mickey has a young son and that, and while she's in a pretty comfy spot where she does, you know, one night a week, goes home, and you know that's it. She just, you know, goes to the gym and works out at home, and she does that. Meanwhile, you know, Nick obviously has to barnstorm in order to help make a living so that they can get through and that.
Yeah.
So, I mean, you know, obviously they have to, you know, the producers, the refs, everybody, you know, it's a tough job being in that striped shirt. Everybody thinks, okay, yeah, they're, you know, the referees are pretending. Okay. The voice of experience here telling you it's not 100% play acting. We are actually doing a job in there. We're not only in some cases calling the match for the guys, we're the ones that are making sure that nothing goes wrong, or if it does go wrong, that we get it stopped right away. And that's something that you know, I think a lot of people don't necessarily understand.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. There's a lot more going on in the ring than we think when we're watching it.
Absolutely, absolutely. I mean, you know, I sit here, like I say, as someone who has done it for over a quarter century, and even you know, I don't always catch everything, and it's like the magician who watches another magician.
Mm-hmm.
He might generally know how the illusion is done, but even the best can be fooled. I mean, hey, Penn and Teller made an entire show out of it.
Yeah.
Trying to find magicians that could even fool them. And there have been a few.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
Anyway, yes. Getting back to the collective and their For the Culture card that we talked about. Another match was announced today, and this one's pretty big for multiple reasons. Lee Moriarty, who is from not only GCW, but he works in New Japan. He also works in DDT wrestling. But he will be facing the man who I talked about a week or two ago, because he was the guy that used the expression "for the culture" as a tab against what he considered to be a racist environment at WWE, and that is none other than ACH.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
That's interesting. Has he done anything since the whole claiming WWE is all full of racists or anything?
Well,
I mean, I've seen him
an odd situation. Yeah, go ahead.
I mean, I've seen him ranting on Twitter quite a bit when the whole release thing was happening and the whole T-shirt thing and all. But honestly, since then, I haven't really heard his name or anything. So, I don't know if he's wrestled since then or anything, but to hear he's getting back in the ring is pretty cool to hear.
Right. Well, here's what's happened. Here's what his history was since that whole thing happened. He got signed by Major League Wrestling, worked one
mm-hmm.
show, walked out, and declared that he was retired from wrestling completely.
All right.
Now, apparently, this was possibly due to some mental health issues. He definitely he has apparently a case of bipolar. Combined with clinical depression.
Okay. That makes a lot of sense, because he definitely had some irrational behaviors and ways of thinking and stuff. So at least he knows, and hopefully taking the proper medication and doing better than what he was. I'm guessing Steve's not here, so I don't know what happened, folks, but I'm going to talk about what my favorite move is. You there?
Okay. Yeah. For some unexplained reason, Skype just completely dropped out. So I'm having to use my phone to go ahead and get back in. So So whatever you were starting to talk about, you go ahead and run with it, and I'll just follow your lead.
All right. All I was going to – when I realized you were gone, all I was going to let fans know that were listening what my favorite finishing move was, and that is the super kick.
Ah, yes, the super kick. Oh, I go back to Chris Adams with that thing. My gosh.
I was just about to say, gentlemen, Chris Adams. He was, as far as I know, he was one of the first ones to be using it.
Yep, that's right. That's right. Back in the days of World Championship Wrestling. So
yep. He used it, and it was such an interesting kick to see, and then as we all know how the rest of it goes, Shawn Michaels is the one who kind of made it famous.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And so then Michaels goes on, Dolph Ziggler has wound up using it, and of course the Young Bucks with their super kick party. So the move has really kind of come. Well, I would say that the super kick is the modern day version of the Jim Brunzell drop kick.
Yeah.
So.
Oh yeah.
And let's see here. I'm forgetting here that I still. Although. Okay. Okay. This is kind of weird. I've got my headset on because I'm still streaming this on YouTube. While I'm having to use the telephone to actually run this thing. So, oh my God. Okay. What a weird night this is. But,
well, Steve, you want to hear a couple other things of news while you're trying to get yourself back on track? Today on Twitter, the Boogeyman teased a WWE return.
Oh, really?
Oh yeah!
Wow!
How about that? It was a photo of the WWE logo, and under that was a photo of his eyes with the face paint and everything, and the colored contacts that he wears and stuff.
Hmm. Okay.
Yeah.
Wow. All right. I'll have to go back over to Twitter when we get done tonight and check that out. So,
and it got me thinking of the 2015 Royal Rumble when he made his return in at number 7 and Bray Wyatt was in the ring. And the crowd went nuts for that. Now, I had posted from my podcast, Perched on the Top Rope, a photoshopped photo of The Fiend and the Boogeyman in the same ring together in like a stare off.
Oh, now that would be wild. Yeah.
Yep,
go ahead.
And it got me thinking how in 2015 in that Royal Rumble, we only got like a 45 second tease of the two of them in the ring together. I want to see that as a feud, or I wouldn't mind seeing a stable of The Fiend, Boogeyman, Alexa Bliss, and call up Damian Priest and make a faction together with them four.
Oh, that would be interesting. The only thing that scares me though, with the possibility of bringing him up, as we were talking about last night, they're already saying they don't have any solid plans for Keith Lee. Oh.
How sad is that?
That is, and they don't have any plans for Mandy Rose, and they just moved her from SmackDown to Raw.
Here's my thing with WWE on some of this stuff. If you don't have plans for them, and why did you call Keith Lee up, put him back, have him go back down to NXT? They just did that with Austin Theory. I don't see an issue with it. Two,
right,
Mandy Rose.
Right.
If that's the case and you don't have plans for her with all the freaking writers that you have, why did you split her and Sonya Deville up anyway? Why would, you know, as much as they're going to push Peyton Royce, and it's already kind of been confirmed they have nothing for Billy Kay. I get wanting to push Peyton as a singles competitor, but why can't you push her as a singles competitor and a tag team? There's no reason why you couldn't. She doesn't – back – you know this, Steve. You've been in the business for a long time. Back in the day, you could have a feud with somebody, whether as a tag team or as a singles competitor, and still have matches in between with other wrestlers and have it still have nothing to do with the feud. But the feud could still go on, and that would spread the feud out instead of jumping a feud from pay-per-view to pay-per-view to pay-per-view, you could stretch that feud out for a couple of months.
Yeah.
You know, have
exactly.
You know, they have a singles competitor. I'm just going to spew out a name like Keith Lee feud with Seth Rollins on the roster. Perfect. All right, great setup. They have, you know, they start the initial feud going in and have one match. It doesn't have to be a pay-per-view. It can be on Raw or whatever.
Right.
The following week, say Keith Lee has a match with a Randy Orton.
Mm-hmm.
Seth doesn't have to get involved with the match or this or that. They could show him, you know, they could go to a camera having him watch on the monitor or have him come out on the stage and maybe interfere. Things like that. We don't really get that
anymore. Or just be standing there watching.
Yeah, we don't get that.
Like, I've got my eye on you.
Yeah.
No, you don't. You know, in the promotions I've worked in, we did a lot of that kind of stuff where we would have a future opponent, you know, come on out and just stand there and watch the guy that they're eventually going to be wrestling and that. And, you know, it always made for a, you know, great, great bit of drawing heat and that. Done right. I mean, you know, come on, you know, work it. So.
Yeah, and you know what the other thing they would do, too, that used to go on?
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't that you always had just one feud going on. You could have one, you could have two feuds going on at the same time.
Right.
You know, that's like another thing that you know, was kind of big during the golden era, like the early 90s and stuff like that. You don't see that anymore. You know, a prime example is look at when LOD came into the WWF. They didn't just feud with one tag team at a time. They feuded with multiple tag teams at a time because at that time they had such great depth in the tag team division. There was so many tag teams, you know, that would, you know, were so close to being that number one contender, or, you know, so they would face, you know, like LOD would take on the Nasty Boys 1 week. But being in a feud with the Natural Disasters because they're the ones who have the tag belts. And so they've got like a mini feud. They've got a mini feud going on leading up to the big feud with the Natural Disasters. So they could have the match with the Nasty Boys and the natural Disasters interfere. Then, you know, they could have that match the following week on Superstars where Hawk takes on Typhoon and Animal takes on one of the Nasty Boys, but then the Nasty Boys jump Hawk and this and that, you know, so they could do that. You don't see that anymore either.
No. WWE has, you know, broken it down to pay-per-view to pay-per-view. And they have shortened the attention span of the wrestling fan.
Yeah, because look at look at the long lengths of title runs that happened during, you know, the 70s with Bruno Sammartino. He held it for 8 years. Then another one who held it for 5, 6, 7 years, however, you know, they were lengthy runs. Now you're lucky if now we consider it a celebration for someone to hold a belt for a year, if they're lucky to hold it that long. Like that, to WWE, that's like now too long.
Right. Exactly. I mean, you know, I grew up with the AWA. I think in total time, there was maybe about 9 months out of all the years that I was watching it from the time I found it in 1971 until it actually shut down in the 90s, where it was either Vern Gagne
or Nick Bockwinkel as champion. There were, you know, there were, there was the short run of the late Otto Vance. Jumbo Tsuruta had a short run with it. Of course, there was the last run, real run with the belt, which was Stan Hansen. Although technically the last champion was Fern's son-in-law Larry Zbyszko.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, still they were lengthy runs, and it was very, you know, I mean, it was a big thing, and usually a title change happened like in St. Paul. It was very rare to have a title change outside of the St. Paul Civic Center, just like you know, Madison Square Garden was where almost all the title changes happened. If something happened in the over in the Spectrum, yo, boy, wow, that was a major surprise, and that. So
yeah,
you know, it was quite the deal. So, well, now Saturday, this early this morning, for everybody in the States, 4 a.m. Eastern time, is the beginning of the G1 Climax tournament, and the lineup for this show is really pretty good. You're going to have in a non-tournament match will be Yota Tsuji against Yuya Uemura. then all the A block matches, which will be Will Ospreay against Yujiro Takahashi. Jeff Cobb will be facing Taichi. Tomohiro Ishii will be facing Minoru Suzuki. Shingo Takagi will be facing Jay White. And then Kazuchika Okada will be facing Kota Ibushi.
Okay.
So,
I'm hearing.
Yeah. And of course, that all goes on to New Japan World with Japanese commentary, at least. Not sure at this point when the English feed commentary is going to be. But there's some definitely some interesting breakdowns on the two blocks here. And that, as to other matchups that are going to happen down the road on this, and I'll pop this up here real quick so that get some info up as to who is going to be. Facing who or who potentially could be facing who later on down the line here. Takahashi might be the surpriser. He might get one win. Very likely, probably not. The big match for Will Ospreay is going to be on day 17 of the tournament, which is when he'll be facing Okada, and I think that's going to be a real solid hard hitting match. For Jeff Cobb will probably at some point face Okada, which
that match is going to, oh my God, that match is going to be stiff as all get out. I mean, I can just, I can already hear the chops and forearm smashes coming across on this one.
Oh God. Yeah.
Yeah.
Those are going to be some sore chests for sure.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Exactly. I wouldn't want to be either one's chest on the day after that one. Now Tai Chi will probably at some point go up against Minoru Suzuki of Suzuki Gun. And then at some point he will probably also be facing Ishii on this. Suzuki, they're figuring his two biggest matches in the tournament are going to be the ones that he goes against Takada and the one against Shingo Takagi. And then with the match with Taichi being one as far as who will actually prevail in that one.
You there?
I'm here.
Yeah. Right, yeah. Yeah, I was losing
you. Oh, okay. Oh man, this is the guy. This is a rough night, folks. I'm definitely looking forward to. I will see this later. I am not going to be up at 3 a.m. my time to watch this, no matter what. let's see here. Okay, and then the B block, Toru Yano, he's the guy they think it possibly will be the one who runs the upsets on this. Then of course Yoshihashi, who was the one person who pinned Kenny Omega in the 2016 tournament. And then he'll also, at some point, he'll be facing his own partner, Hiroki Goto. Then you've got Sonata. He'll be at some point facing off against both Naito and Evil. Zack Sabre Jr. Will probably run up at some point against against Naito.
That's going to be a good match.
Right. Juice Robinson also at some point will face not only Naito, but he'll be facing his partner, Hiroshi Tanahashi. Now the one thing that he's got on his record is he is the person who eliminated Jon Moxley last year.
Yeah. And I mean, I'm in the back of my head every time I hear Juice Robinson's name, I just kind of think how WWE really dropped the ball with him when they had him.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and now here he is in New Japan, and he is shining and flourishing, and I can't wait for that match.
Oh yeah, definitely. I'm gonna be looking a lot of this stuff here after it comes out. And then Goto. Through in the tournament at some point, he'll be facing both Tanahashi and Naito.
And then, of course, Kenta Kobayashi. He might wind up facing Naito, and then of course Evil. And you wonder possibly would Evil wind up going across the ring from Jay White. Now that because that's gonna be an interesting storyline. What are they gonna do with the Bullet Club now that Jay White is back?
Ooh. Yeah.
It's gonna be. I'm with you, man. I'm waiting to see what they come up with for this. Yeah. So. All right. Well, we've hit our hour time, and as weird as this thing has been, it's probably best to. Yeah, to go ahead and go off this. I just saw that the video is disconnected, so we're gonna go ahead and get ready to call this a night. So, Lee, have yourself a great week, and we'll talk this week. And if you want to be on here next week, you're welcome. I mean, you can basically consider yourself a co-host and that. So, and you can check out Lee also at sportskita.com and Perched on the Top Rope, his own podcast. I am the Dean, Steve Kane. We'll talk to you next week.
Thank you for listening to Live from the Dean's Den. Live from the Dean's Den comes to you every Friday night at 10 p.m. Eastern on Blog Talk Radio on Evolution Radio Network. Replays can be found on Anchor FM, Spotify, iTunes, and wherever else you get your podcasts. Thanks for listening. We'll talk to you next week.